Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame, the show where we talk about movies that don't get talked about enough. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode, we will be discussing the 2000 Japanese dystopian thriller Battle Royale, as well as breaking down some more trailer trash talk and playing another round of the review game. But first, let me introduce the only person I know who could watch at least 5 James Bond movies in a week, Donnie Nelson.
Hello. I'm very tired of James Bond. That's not true. Just one in particular.
Lazenby.
No. He's okay. He's supposed to be a stick in the mud. Yes, Roger Moore is a piece of shit.
That's what I hear from everyone.
I'm trying not to be sarcastic when I say that, because I mean it in the bottom of my heart.
Despite, I don't know that I've ever, I don't think I've actually seen a Roger Moore.
Didn't you say you saw the Man with the Golden Gun?
Yeah, is that a Roger Moore?
It's a Roger Moore one.
Oh, okay, then I guess I have seen a Roger Moore.
Not very memorable, apparently.
All I remember is the little person.
Yeah.
That's it.
Uh-huh. Moving on.
What was the worst thing that you saw this week, sir?
The worst thing I saw this week was Tomb Raider. This Tomb Raider is the one that is based off the rebooted games. And this movie came out in 2018. That's very recent. Mm-hmm. It is not very... like, a lot of people don't have very good things to say about the Laura... the Angelina Jolie Laura Croft films. The second one being horrible. The first one, I think, is okay. Like, it's watchable. Mm-hmm. But this new one, it goes for, like, the more realistic direction of the newer games. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. And when I watched trailers, I was like, they're literally just pulling specific things from the game and putting it in the movie. And I thought that was just going to turn out horrible. And the first, like, 40 minutes of the film are horrible. They're like... It's like scenes setting up that Lara Croft does not want to accept that her father is dead because he went missing 7 years ago, and she doesn't want to sign the papers that say he's officially dead and that she inherits all the estate and everything like that and all the fortune.
Yeah. Typical orphan movie stuff.
And there's like a 10-minute sequence where, like, she's a bike courier, and they play this game called, like, Catch the Fox or Fox Chase, where there's one biker who rides around with a foxtail behind him on, like, an antenna, and on the side of the bike is a can of paint that they stab with, like, a screwdriver, and the whole thing is that the person has to, like, evade, like 20 to 30 other bikers who are trying to catch her and get the tail. Mm-hmm. And if she goes far enough and keeps the tail away from them until the can of paint empties, then she gets, like, all the money that was put into the pot at the beginning. And it sucks. Like, it's a 10-minute sequence of, like, pretty much learning nothing other than the fact that, like, oh, Laura's she's reckless and she's like, no, she's just, it's not good. And then they finally get to the island, which is, like, where the movie actually starts to kick off, because it's not just Laura being stubborn and
does some actual tomb raiding.
Mm-hmm. And it's and yeah, because honestly, I mean, she is fairly bland. She's not, like, quippy, and I get that, like, you don't have to be quippy. Like, this is a more realistic take on her. But also there's no fun for like the first 40 minutes or hour. And then you get to the island, and then you and her father is played by Dominic Purcell, you know. What's his name on The Wire? Do you remember?
Who's Dominic Purcell?
I think that's his name. But he's like the main detective in The Wire. Anyway, he plays Jigsaw.
That's Dominic Monaghan.
Dominic Monaghan. Okay.
Yeah. And
wait, that's not one of the Hobbits?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's fair. But
I mean, I don't know. He might be in The Hobbit.
Okay, that's
and
fair.
His character name is Jimmy McNulty.
Okay. So, I mean, he's in it because it's the same dude who plays Jigsaw in Punisher Warzone. So, that dude. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, okay. He doesn't have a lot to work with, but he does what he can. Because, spoilers, mm-hmm. he's actually alive, and Laura finds her. Laura. And then, the saving grace of this film, Jason, Walton Goggins, the villain, is very good. He's actually like, I feel like he was in this. Yeah, he's the dude who's sent to this island to find, you know, this tomb of this queen of death. And if you want to watch it, I won't spoil it for you, but it's just some good old fashioned, you know, tomb raiding. It's like secondhand Indiana Jones.
Is this a case where Walton Goggins just kind of feels like he wandered in from another movie?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what he makes
loves
it
to
so
do
fun.
This. And yeah, he comes into the movie, and it's almost like it's like this weird like shock of like, oh, this person was like not directed. He knew what he was doing. And he actually took his role seriously, and then he didn't think he was playing for a movie better than what he was in. So that is, I would say, if you have to watch this film, he is like the main reason, because he's very good in it. Mm-hmm. There are two scenes with Nick Frost which are very good. And the reason why I watched this Tomb Raider is because they just announced that there's a sequel that they're making. And if the sequel has more Nick Frost in it, then I am down. Because I want more Nick Frost. He is funny in all things he does.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the worst thing I saw this week. How about you, Jason? Right. What's the worst thing you saw?
Well, first of all, now I kind of want to watch Tomb Raider.
You can skip forward like 40 minutes.
Second of all, the worst thing that I saw this week was not necessarily bad, but it was It Chapter 2, which is the sequel to the first It. It came out a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm a huge fan of the book. And there's just so much stuff in the book, and I feel like there's a lot of times where in the movie you'll be watching it, and then all of a sudden there'll be just like a random thing, and they'll be like, hey, remember this?
Ooh.
And it's just a lot of like, hey, remember this from the book? Well, now it's here. And I don't know, like, they don't really do anything with any of the stuff that they pull in. But at the same time, Bill Hader is really great. He's definitely the scene stealer of the movie. And then I forget his name, but he's also on The Wire. And he plays Eddie as an adult, and he's pretty great. But it just feels like a lot of the rest of the cast just isn't given anything to do.
Mm.
So
about Miss Chastain, she doesn't have a whole bunch to do.
Not really, which is a real bummer because Bev was like the most interesting character in the first movie.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's just one of those cases where it's like there's a lot of stuff that they do really, really well, but there's also a lot of stuff that they don't do very well. And then the end result just ends up being meh. Because it is 2 hours and 45 goddamn minutes.
It's a horror epic, Jason.
Very, very, very long. And I feel like the only reason that they did that was so that he could edit it into a, you know, one giant movie, which he has said he intends to do. So, whatever. Nice. I'll watch that.
Whatever.
It's also tonally, it's just kind of rough because there's so many flashbacks and them as kids are a billion times more charismatic and more interesting than them as adults. But, oh, and then, yeah. I mean, you know, Pennywise is fun to watch, as always, but, yeah, it's okay.
I, as a person who has seen the first one but not seen this one, and hearing the criticisms of, like, them bringing the kids into the sequel when I guess it should have just been all the adults. I feel like maybe that should have been the time, because like that's the whole reason why they put the kids in this film is because of the marketing, right? Like they want to, or like they know what people liked about the first movie was that the kids were good, right? That cast is pretty good, and that they're like, oh well, now we have to make the sequel where they're adults, but we need to have the kids in there too because the kids were a good part and people want to see them. Otherwise, I mean, why else would you put them in there? I mean, they could have just had like all adults the entire way through, right?
Yeah.
So I just think that kind of muddies the water. I've always thought that since they said they were doing that.
I don't know. There's just a lot they could have cut out.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, but whatever. They made it. I saw it. It was fine. What was the best thing you saw this week?
The best thing I saw this week, in honor of Rambo Last Blood coming out in the coming weeks, is Bullet to the Head, which is a movie that came out in 2012 that I honestly don't think a lot of people saw. And I've seen it once before and I liked it, and I watched it again this past week and realized that I actually really like that movie. Like, it's very like a lean like 90s 80s kind of action movie, and it's like almost like a buddy cop comedy.
I have to be honest, I think the biggest criticism I have towards present day Stallone movies is that they star him. And it's just such a challenge to take him seriously.
That he's just because, Stallone in there?
Well, that he can't turn his neck or his head at all.
That's very good. Very good.
He's like Batman.
Yeah, he's like permanent Keaton Batman.
If he's gotta look behind him or look to the side, his whole body is moving. Oh, sorry, I just moved away from my mic.
I mean, you're doing a good impression.
But his whole body moves. It looks like he's made out of like plastic. Like, and
I don't mind.
I mean, one of the movies that I've wanted to do on the show, that I've mentioned before, is Escape Plan, because I think you and I both really enjoy that movie, despite it starring two people that are unable to move themselves, Stallone and Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
But no, that was my biggest issue with that movie, is, like, they're just so, like, robotic in their movements. It's impossible to understand what is going on,
I suppose, but you know,
take them seriously.
I I don't know if serious is the right word I'd use when I say when I enjoy Sylvester Stallone movies, mm-hmm. present day, and then, you know, maybe some of his older films too, but I just like that this movie is super lean, like. Mm-hmm. They don't mince a lot of words, and when they do, it's like Sylvester Stallone making a racist joke about, you know, saying something racist to, not his partner, because, like, he doesn't play a cop in this movie. He's a hitman, and yep. there's a cop from out of town who comes in and, like, talks to him because he knows the police there aren't going to help him. So he's like, oh, I'm just going to go to this dude I know who's connected to these murders, and he's, like, a top hitman. But whatever, the dynamic kind of makes it a lot more interesting. And also, I think Jason Momoa kind of, like, back in his still being Khal Drogo days in Game of Thrones, like, where he's playing the bad guy this movie, and, like, he's very straightforward, but, like, he plays it that way, and I don't mind it at all. Like, he's very short-sighted. But also, Adewale, I can't remember. His name is such a mouthful, but he plays, like, the person behind Jason Momoa's character, who's the villain in it, and he's also very good. We're talking about HBO shows, him from Oz, which is amazing. But I think... Like, I just really... And also, I just like to see Sung Kang in more things. That's all. And the stuff between... It's just... If you enjoy at all, like, 80s or 90s action films, like, this was, like, the last time for them to do something like that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of read up that Walter Hill, who directed this, was very much like, oh, yeah, this is what we were doing. And... This was the last time we were going to be able to ever do anything, like, with Sylvester Stallone doing this. And then everything else had to be either Rocky or Rambo, it seems. Because there ain't no more Expendables being made.
Or the aborted script for Rambo.
Rambo, yeah. The one where he's fighting an alien.
Yeah, they're still making that.
True, but it's not a Rambo movie anymore. Nope. Correct? Yep.
Because this Rambo movie is Last Blood, or Final Blood, whatever it is.
It's last.
Yeah.
So, first and last.
That's it. There's no more. He can't fight an alien.
He can't, no. He's so old.
He is so old.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if, like, they made, at the end of one of the Alien vs. Predator movies, it just, one of the Predators took off his mask, and it just turned out to be Sylvester Stallone? I mean, it would make so much sense, right?
I mean, I would love it if something like that, or, like, I would love to see a fan cut of, the Disney movie Hercules that ends with, that shot of Mount Olympus, and it's like, and the gods lived happily ever after, and then it just, like, zooms out and Kratos is just standing there. That would be pretty great. I would love, oh, what's the other one that, oh, the to edit a scene together of introducing, like, that comic of Thanos killing John Wick's dog.
Yeah.
And then him just appearing. Like, that sort of stuff. That would be great. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
But, it'd be good. Yeah, no, I enjoyed that movie. I thought it was fun.
Yeah. Also... Jason, what is the best thing you saw this week?
I finally got around to watching Kings of Summer, which is currently streaming on Prime. And, man, not only does that movie have, like, one of the greatest casts of all time, because you've got Kumail Nanjiani, you've got Nick Offerman, you've got Alison Brie, you've got, what are their names? Megan Mullaney. Wanted to see it after I saw the trailer because I thought the premise just sounded goofy as hell, which if you have not heard of it, it came out a couple of years ago, and it is basically these three kids who have grown sick and tired of being parented, and so they decide to build a house in the middle of the woods. And one of the kids thinks that they should try to convince everybody they've been kidnapped, and the other kid is like, no, let's just leave. And that leads to one of my favorite jokes in the movie, which is that one set of parents is in denial that their kid has been kidnapped, and they keep, or that their kid ran away, and they keep saying that he's been kidnapped. And Nick Offerman says, like, one of the most Nick Offerman things ever, which is, yeah, somebody broke into our house, stole all our canned goods, our tools, and our children. Which I thought was really funny. And Thomas Middleditch is in it. And then the three kids that they have that play the teenagers are just great. And I don't know that any of them have had big roles in anything else, but they were all fantastic. I really liked it. I was really surprised. I was worried that it wouldn't live up to my expectations just because it came out in 2013 and I've wanted to see it pretty much since then.
Don't know why you didn't sooner.
Yeah.
Right on.
So, I really, really liked it. If you have Prime, I highly recommend that you check it out. So, that's all I have to say about Kings of Summer. It's great. Jordan Vogt Roberts is a wonderful filmmaker, and I have thoroughly enjoyed both of his movies thus far. And I don't know what he's doing next, but I'm excited for it. Although I do think it's funny that the only two movies he's made are Kong Skull Island and Kings of Summer, which means that he's just into making movies about kings.
Oh yeah, and that dude's supposed to like, he's supposed to be the new director, or he's the new one trying to get a Metal Gear Solid movie made.
Yep.
Yeah, guess we'll see. If he actually gets around to making that, then I'll be excited, but also, that movie's never getting made.
I know.
Let's be realistic here.
Konami.
I mean, we're going to get a Death Stranding movie before we get that movie.
Truth. All right. So, let's get us into some trailer trash talk. We just watched the newest trailer for 3 from Hell, which Donnie had not seen. So, what'd you think of it?
It's good. Because I told you that I thought I had just watched the one that came out, but I guess there was another one that is a little bit more in-depth than the one that I watched. And it's true, that one, I mean, it really doesn't give you any, like, indication about what the structure of that movie is. Only the fact that, like, these characters are just off the hinge, just like they have been for two other movies now. And it is an exciting trailer. I hope it's an exciting movie, because I don't know if they're going to be able to keep momentum up or if it's going to be another 31, which I didn't appreciate the pacing of that, and there's a lot of stuff that really doesn't work with that film. and I am afraid that Rob Zombie is like starting to like go downhill as a filmmaker, even to like shut the hell up, Jason. Like I'm, because there's like certain things that I expect and want to do or want from a Rob Zombie movie, and like 31 was not what I wanted from a Rob Zombie movie. Like, to a certain extent, there was a very good high in that movie, but also the lows were, like, lower than I had, like, I've seen before.
And I think that's hilarious, because 31 might be my favorite Rob Zombie movie.
Yeah, because I think we're just kind of, like, diametrically opposed. But I think we probably enjoy Werewolf Women of the SS probably the same amount. Yeah. So, because I think, like, that's why this trailer works, I think, is because when he's, like, forced to make these, like, short-form things, mm-hmm. and he's able to, like, Werewolf Women of the SS, like, he made, like, he almost shot an entire film, and they're like, yeah. Oh, no, you're supposed to just cut it, it's just a trailer. And he's just like, oh, okay. Like, that's the great thing, is that he could make an entire movie, and then just, when you whittle it down to a trailer, it's like, oh, wow, this is pretty fun.
Hashtag unmade movies I'd love to see.
Yeah. So, I have my hopes up, because I do want to see more from these characters, and I think the actors, like Bill Moseley, is still pretty good as Otis.
His fucking glare, man. Like, mm-hmm. there's that one shot where he's just like, doesn't he say, like, hey, America, are you ready for me? Or something like that.
He's like, hey there, America, did you miss me?
Yeah, that's what it is. And he's just, like, bugging his eyes out as hard as he possibly can out of his skull. Yeah.
He has another good line that is, like, the line that he had from Devil's Rejects, mm-hmm. where he's just like, He's like, I'm Satan. I'm here to do the devil's work, or something like that.
Yeah.
And in this one, he says, you're in my death factory, and you're the product. Very good.
The line that I liked the most from this trailer was I'm just a clown dancing for the sins of the world. Which is Sid Haig's Captain Spaulding.
He's so good. I don't know if that whole, like, nationalistic thing is gonna, like, thread throughout that entire film. Of, like, oh, we're just doing this because this is the American way. Like, I feel like there's gonna be a lot of that in this movie.
Probably. Because it's satire.
Yep. Exactly. And then there's also the addition of an actor that you really liked from 31.
That's what I didn't realize was
going to be a big part, but
that's what I was going to mention. I'm really excited because the guy that played Doomhead is in this movie, and although he has not confirmed it, and nobody has confirmed it, there's a lot of rumors that he is playing just the same character.
I would not doubt that.
Yeah, which I looked it up just because I was curious, and his character in Three from Hell is not Doomhead, but I've still got hope.
Yeah.
I'm still excited. I'm still interested, because that guy is just great.
He's so good. And if that's the case, I'd like to know where in the timeline 31 fits.
What if he's Captain Spaulding's son?
Yeah. But isn't Otis is his son too? Like, he's supposed to be the dad that was absent from the House of a Thousand Corpses. Because, like, their dad is not there, and then in the second one they call him Daddy. Well, at least the girl does. Sherry Moon Zombie's character.
Man, I don't know how those people are related.
But he is related to him. He's a part of the Firefly. And I think they call him Daddy throughout that movie. Which could be a sexual thing, too. Who knows? I don't know.
Which is interesting, because Sherry Moon Zombie plays a character in 31 who presumably dies at the end.
Yeah, because they don't show it, but Doomhead, even after the game ends, like catches up to her, mm-hmm. and then they have their standoff, and then don't see the fight.
They have their the gray moment.
The gray moment. Yes, exactly. And then you never know what happens. It's just that's the end of the story. That's where it leaves off.
Did you know there's a post credit scene to The Gray?
What is it?
It's Liam Neeson laying on top of the wolf, and they both appear to be dead.
That's okay.
You know, right?
I think that's probably a suiting gift to a person who sets through the credits. And goes like, man, they didn't end it. No, he ended it. Like, they're both dead.
You want an ending? They're both fucking dead.
I can see that man. What's his name again? Joe? I can't remember the dude.
Oh,
Carnahan?
The guy that did The Gray?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to look real quick because I don't remember. Let's just assume you're right for now.
Yeah, but that is...
Yeah, it's Joe Carnahan.
Okay. I think that's appropriate. I have nothing but good things to say about this trailer, and I can only hope that the movie matches up to it.
Yeah, I was super excited at first because it's getting a theatrical release down here, and I posted about this on the website, and I was excited at first because if you get your ticket and you show up early enough, you get a poster. And then I was like, you know, as much as I want this poster, I don't know if it's worth me sitting through a Rob Zombie movie.
Oh, shut the fuck up. I'm sorry, that's that. I'm trying not to curse as much on this.
So, I don't know.
It's fine. You don't have to like Rob Zombie movies. He has not made his library, his filmography is not the best, but... He makes films the way he makes films, and I would very much like to watch that original cut of the first Halloween that he made.
And he has found an audience for his movies, so
mm-hmm. I'm forever interested in what he does, whether or not I like it or think it's good. That's something for another day.
All right, let's get into Battle Royale.
Yeah.
Fortnite, the movie. Shut up. The Hunger Games remake. All right, that's so
the worst.
Battle Royale is based on a book, which is also from Japan, and has been adapted into a manga. Which is also in Japan. And
strangely not an anime, though.
Yeah, right? And they've pirated some of the costumes from the movie into... is it...
PlayerUnknown's PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which Donnie and I were looking at right before we started recording, which... I mean, they kind of look that way. I do think it's funny that when The Hunger Games came out, there were a lot of people that were like, oh, you should sue. Sue! And the writer of the book looked at... at first, he was kind of like, yeah, I'll look into it. And then... and then later he was like, I don't think there's enough similarities. And
wait, the writer of
Battle Royale.
Battle Royale. Oh, okay. Yeah. He looked into Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he was like, I don't think there's enough similarities. And for me, what that translates to is that Hollywood was just like, have some money.
Maybe.
Sign this NDA. All good.
You don't have nice things to say. Don't say anything at all.
All right, so for anybody who has not seen Battle Royale, it is basically the Hunger Games. Japan
but they're
has...
not in a, I would say it's not necessarily a dystopia, but it is not, like, the world hasn't fallen out of grace.
It's the country
has turned into, like, an authoritarian, like, more so than... I'm digging myself a hole. Go on.
I was going to say, it's not your average, like, dystopian world that we get today. Because this one is more... I would say it's more similar to, like, A Clockwork Orange. In that, like, I don't know, everybody's just uber violent.
I suppose.
And the children are all just running wild. And you've also got the totalitarian government, but they don't seem to have as strong a grasp as either they once did or... they used to, or at least as strong a grasp as you would imagine. Mm-hmm. So, what happens is there is a class of, it's just 30, right? 30 students?
About.
Yeah, and, because there's 15 boys, 15 girls. And... so what happens is they wake up in a room and they've all got these collars on their necks and they're told that if they try to take them off or if they try to leave the island, they will explode. Mm-hmm. And also if they get caught up in these certain zones, because the map or the island is divided up like a grid. And so if you get stuck in a zone... it'll explode.
Yep.
And you will die. Mm-hmm. And so then you are given a bag with 3 days survival ration and a sleeping bag and a random weapon.
Yep.
And your weapon can be anything from a pot lid to binoculars to an M16. To nunchucks. Mm-hmm. It's basically Fortnite. Everybody just tries to kill each other. And uh-huh. Whoever is left gets to get off the island. So.
Yes, in theory.
Yeah. And the person who's present for this is their old teacher, played by Takeshi Kitano, playing a character named Kitano.
Uh-huh.
Who he has one of my favorite mannerisms in the movie, which is one of the girls has made cookies and he is like compulsively eating them throughout the film, and whenever one of the other soldiers comes by to try to grab one, he like smacks them as hard as he can. And so just up front, this is like one of my all time favorite movies. This might be in my top 10 favorite films ever made. I really, really like this movie a lot. Yeah, I don't know. How do you feel about this film, Donnie?
I will say that this movie is not one that like I get tired of very easily. It is a movie that I can watch a lot of, considering the fact that I'm just Takeshi Kitano fan myself. I mm-hmm. just like his films. This isn't his film. He is an actor playing in this film, but mm-hmm. he is pretty much just playing himself or just doing what he typically does in his films, and I'm sure he does in his stand-up act as well. But he is, like, the beaten down, older man who is, like, has nothing really good in his life, and that is why he finds such joy in causing harm to all these ungrateful students of his.
Well, I feel like there's maybe one more reason, which is that one of the kids stabbed him in the leg with a knife.
Yes, slashed his leg coming out of a classroom, which is, like, I think is a little bit overboard. Like, I don't think that's acceptable to slash teachers in schools. Mm-hmm. Considering that in some way is the main reason why these kids are chosen in the first place, because he's brought in and he's ready and willing to do it. I just think it's a movie of small vignettes, like here and there, and it really shows it, because there's a lot of, like, cards that break the action. Like, they either are saying, like, these characters are now dead, or they have these weird sayings that they put up in title cards that really make it feel like you're moving from one story to another. It's mm-hmm. a continuous thing. I almost feels like chapters in a book. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. And I think the pacing is really good. The actors in it, like, every single time there's, like, it's almost like if you have a short attention span, if you're someone who gets bored easily during a film, I feel like this movie is like, oh, just wait 5 minutes and there'll be something that, like, that you'll be entertained by. Yep. So in that way, I think it both appeals to people who need to constantly be, like, to want to watch something different, watch something entertaining, but also, like, I don't know what else these kids would do in this situation, and they all have, like, distinctive personalities, and they all kind of mm-hmm. have their own, as a class, as, like, a dynamic of a class, like, they all kind of know each other for the most part, mm-hmm. so they're not, like, complete strangers going out to kill each other. They're just, like, they're kids in a class who they all know each other, and they need to, you know, deal with, like, the fact that other kids are bullying them before they went to the island, and that, like, there were some that had crushes on others, and then there's weird stuff going on, like best friends, and, like, all that stuff kind of just works to its benefit. It just, like, you could watch this more than a few times, and, like, there's still stuff you can catch. There's more like relationships that you can find more out of, mm-hmm. you know. It's one of those movies that just kind of, like, it is a movie that entertains, like, it's a thriller, but it also is just it's just like a nice, it's like a fun thrill ride, you know, mm-hmm. like, there's depth to it, but also it's just this, like, essentially summer blockbuster about kids killing each other on an island.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I should say I've read the book that this is based on, and after I went back and rewatched it for the first time since reading the book, I noticed there's a lot more story packed into this film. Like, almost every line reveals something about the characters and who they are and what they've been doing. One of my favorite examples is, what's her name? Is it Mitsuko? The, like, yeah, Mitsuko. Demon girl? Mitsuko?
Yes, yeah. Yes. The demon girl.
Yeah. The one that's just pure fucking evil. In the book, they go into detail about how she basically started a prostitution ring that involves girls from her school. And wow. She's, like, forcing them to pimp themselves out. And if you go back and rewatch the movie, you'll notice that there's one line where one of the girls says, "What's wrong with you? You're pimping out so-and-so." And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'd never noticed that before. And so I thought that was kind of cool. Like, there's so much to unpack in every bit of this movie. And every time I rewatch it, I feel like I find more stuff. Another thing that one of my favorite character moments in the film is when Chigusa, when that creepy stalker dude is, like, going after her. And he's like, "No, come with me, I can protect you." And she's like, "Fuck off." And then he like pushes her or something and scratches her face. And the look
he shoots an arrow because he has the crossbow.
That's what it is. Yep.
Yeah, like, but she's just like completely unfazed that he's like pointing a crossbow in her face, because she's just like, "No, you love me too much. We wouldn't actually do anything."
Yeah.
And then he fires one accidentally, and it goes across her cheek. So she has a scar there.
Yeah, and the look that she gets on her face is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
When she realizes that she's been shot. She's just like, "You've harmed my face." And yeah, he's like, "You made me do it." And she's like, "What have you done?"
And then just pulls out a knife and just like, "All right, you want to do this? We're going to do this."
Yeah, and then she keeps threatening to cut his dick off.
Mm-hmm. And then ultimately stabs him in either the junk or the butthole. One of the two, she definitely stabs.
Yeah.
Is very good.
Yeah.
But also see Kill Bill Volume 1, because she is also in that as Go-Go.
Yep.
Because Quentin Tarantino saw the genius of this young actress and put her in his film. So, if you want more of that, you can go to that film.
Where she has a equally bothersome encounter with...
Yes, and also, like, I don't think stabs him in the... Maybe the abdomen, but there's a lot of stuff that falls out.
She, like, disembowels him.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting.
Very.
But it's great.
But, yeah, this movie is, like, I could keep watching it. Like, it's hard to really point out anything negative about it. Like, I would suppose, I don't know. Like, I would say that, like, watching, teenagers, like, kill each other is, like, maybe, mm-hmm. like, a depraved thing to watch. But also, like, it's ridiculous and also realistic at the same time. I feel like it can always be read as multiple different ways when you watch this movie. Like, it's both satire and also, like, an actual horrible situation that everybody gets put into. But also mm-hmm. you see the comedy in, like, how people react when they're put in these situations. Especially with the lighthouse, where the one girl accidentally, like, causes, like, everybody to turn on each other in the lighthouse.
In, like, 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Because she doesn't like, the main character that's been brought there for medical attention.
Shuya,
correct. Nanahara. And, one of the girls wants to kill him. So, and her weapon that she was given was, like, rat poison or some kind of poison. And she puts the poison in the bowl of soup that someone was going to bring him. But then a girl comes in and just starts eating the soup or the food that that they were going to give to him. And then she starts getting sick. And then everybody thinks that each other are turning on each other. And so then they all just, like, it's like...
murder each other.
It's a massacre.
And except then for that one girl.
Yeah, the person who's left alive is the one that caused it all. And then she just jumps off the lighthouse.
Yep.
That's a good time. This is horrible.
Very uplifting movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good.
It is good. It's great.
Why don't people talk about this movie more?
I think the only thing that I was, not that I'm disappointed by, but that I wish that they had done something with, is they never really do anything with the safety zones.
No. Well, like, when the safety zones being, like, getting out of the grid sections that'll make your collar explode. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We see what happens when your collar explodes, like, at the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. When Shuya's best friend, like, gets his neck exploded. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, yeah, it's Kawada? Terrible.
No,
Kawada is the one of the transfers.
Yeah.
He's someone who's been in the game before. I'm not entirely sure.
I don't know how to say this.
Here, let me.
Nakagawa.
Nakagawa?
Yeah.
But anyway, they show what happens there, but, like, in the
course... Oh, no, it's I can't talk because of my stutter. Kuninubo. Nobo. That's what they call him, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah, let's just go with it. That works. Works for me. Yeah, they could have done something with that. I think they just kind of figure the people who have made it so far are smart enough to listen to the announcements and know where not to go. And so it gives them a reason to keep moving around the island. Mm-hmm. And also I think it's a valid way to keep them moving as opposed to just staying in one place and waiting for the end and camping, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. That is his name. And I don't know. Yeah, it just kind of makes it more interesting. So I suppose I don't have a problem with that. Just because you see what the consequences of being in one of those zones is. But it's something that's, like, in the back of your mind whenever they call out which ones are the ones that are, you know, the red zones. The ones that are that you don't want to be in. Danger zones. Danger yeah. zones! but, yeah.
Danger zone.
Would you...
Sorry, go ahead.
I have a question for you, because we could just, like, break down every little thing about this film. I think we both just enjoy it a whole bunch. Like, it is a very good movie. Can't stop watching mm-hmm. it. Can't stop, won't stop. But, here's my question to you, is because we know who wins.
Yes.
However, who did you want to win? If you could rewrite this movie to have a person that you like the most to win the Battle Royale, who would it have been?
I honestly would have picked... Oh, I can't remember his name, but it's, the guy who's building the bomb.
Oh, sure. Memora?
I don't remember. Is that his name?
I believe so, because he's the one that ultimately sets it off.
Yeah, Memura. Yeah, it would have been him, because I feel like out of all of them, he was the first, like... Or not the first, but he was, like, the most... he hacks into the soldiers, or the military computer system. He builds that big-ass bomb. He's received combat training from his uncle, like... I feel like out of all of them, he's the one that, like, it would have made the most sense to win. Not only that, but he's got those two guys that are just following him around who are apparently dumb as rocks. Mm-hmm. Which, it's not even a joke. They're really fucking stupid.
They're just dumb.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think I would have picked either him or Kawada. What about you?
I think I probably would have Miss Demon Lady herself. I think I would have been excited to see her win, honestly. Because as much as, like you said, in when they were back in the high school, or back in school, and also what you read in the book is that she was, like, you know, essentially had a prostitution ring in the school. But there is, and I watched the second cut, not the theatrical cut, and there is an added scene that shows her, like, coming home to her mother with a guy, and, like, the guy tries to, like, put,
I mean,
her,
it's implied that the guy, the mom is pimping out her daughter.
Right, so it's just like a cycle of violence, and like the guy forces himself on her, and he pushes her down, or she pushes him downstairs, which like shows how like vicious she can be, and like able to stand up. And I just think that the way that she dies is a little, because I suppose when it comes to actually cheering for certain characters in this movie, I think my biggest problem would be the, because there's two transfers. There is Kawada, and then there is that dude. Can't think of it off the top of my head. But he is a bastard.
His name is Kiriyama.
Kiriyama. Okay. Yeah.
And real quick, I just want to say that in the book, he is not a transfer student. He's been in the class the whole time. He's just like a fucking psychopath. And
okay.
He's not in the movie, he's completely silent the whole time. And in the book, I think he's got like a couple of lines. And there's a part where, like, cuz he's got like this little mafia that follow him around, and in the book what happens is he's like, one of his gang members find him, and they're like, hey, what are we gonna do about this? And he's like, you know, I've been sitting here thinking about that, and I flipped this coin, and I decided if it was heads, I was gonna play my heart out, and if it was tails, I was just gonna sit here and wait for everybody else to kill me. And then the guy is like, so what was it? And then instead of responding, he just shoots him in the head. And then he's like, it was heads. And he gets up and walks away. Which is one of my favorite moments in the book. But yeah, so the other thing that's interesting is that Kawada's character in the book is actually a transfer student, in that he was transferred. He was in a class, because Kawada's, so in the movie, Kawada's story, let me pull this back up. So in the movie, Kiriyama, his story is that he volunteered to be in the game, and Kawada had already played the game one time, and they just decided to put him back in. And in the book, it's different, because in the book, what happens is Kawada had previously won the game, and then when he got reinserted back into school, he wound up in this school, and they just happened to get picked to play the game.
Jesus.
Which is pretty fucking shitty luck.
It's not good.
So, those are a couple changes that I thought were interesting.
Right on. That's, yeah, so, that's pretty interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think the only other thing that I really have to, or that I really want to discuss with you is Kitano and his drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Of the
his wonderful drawing.
Yeah, of all the students laying dead with what's her name? Nariko. At the center of it. Looking like a happy little angel.
Yes.
Why do you think he drew that?
Because she is the only point of goodness in his life. Also, he needed to express himself. I don't know. It's not a particularly well-drawn drawing.
No, it looks like a... looks like something a child would draw.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's saying something, Jason. Maybe he's a child
on the inside.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Aww. He wasn't ready to grow up and have a daughter who hates his guts. And have a horrible life.
Oh, yeah, because he does, right? He gets a phone call at the end. And,
after he gets shot.
Yeah, after he gets shot.
Because they think he's dead. And then he gets up and answers the phone when it rings. After he's shot.
Yeah.
Which is good.
And it's either his daughter or his wife. And right. He's like... They're being really rude to him. And then he's just like, fuck you, I'm dying. And throws
it on the ground and shoots it.
How do you like where it ends? Sometimes when I watch it, I wish that it just ended with them in the boat.
Yes, I think that would have been, I think it's preference. I think, in the book or in the boat, it definitely would make sense and I would enjoy it because it's like Kawada seems like he's about to die. And them on a boat would be a good way to show uncertainty. And I think, like, there doesn't... They've won the game, and now, after winning the game, I feel like there doesn't need to be any certainty after that point. Like, that's the end of the movie. Which is the whole reason why I don't think the sequel should exist in the first place, but we could talk about that another time. But, like, that's the whole point, is, like, we don't have to see that they've gotten off the island. They're on the boat. We don't have to see them like make a phone call and then run off on the streets of, you know, Tokyo. Like, that's unnecessary. Like, we don't have to see that.
I mean, I think the only reason they did that is because that's where the book leaves it, is them running through the streets of Tokyo.
Right.
But still, I agree. I mean, I think that. Yeah, that message would have been, I don't know. I would have enjoyed it more if it had just ended with them in the boat. Yeah. So let's talk about the sequel for a minute.
No, you've seen it. I have not seen it.
I was gonna say, have you actually seen? Okay, so the premise of the sequel is they abduct a class. And in this one, there is a buddy system. So if your buddy gets killed, then your collar goes off. Which sounds really interesting until you realize, or until you're told, like, this is, like, the sequel is not like a normal, or it's not like just a repeat of Battle Royale. Because what happens is you find out that the survivors of the first movie, after escaping.
After they escaped, yeah.
Yeah. They take, or they start a rebellious group against all adults. And I don't know if this is a case where, like, I don't know if this is translation issues or if this is actually what it says in the script. But instead of rebelling against, like, the powers that be, they're literally just rebelling against adults and parents. And which I thought was kind of funny because I was like, you guys are all old now. Like, you guys are adults now. And they're called, I think they're called the Wild Stallions. Or the Wilds, the Seven Stallions.
Let's make sure that we have this right.
It's something like that.
Because it's way too close to the Lone Stallions, okay? Bill and Ted are not in these movies.
They could be.
No. Maybe.
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 Wild Seven. There we go.
Wild Set. Not even close, Jason. What the hell?
I said Seven.
What are you
Stallions.
Doing with your life? Okay, sure, sure.
Alright, so what happens is you find out there's this gang or this anti-government group called the Wild Seven. And what happens is they are holed up on this island, and instead of sending in the military, they send in this platoon of children.
Which is another class. So they do abduct a class, but it's...
But they give them no training.
Mm-hmm.
At all. They give them each, I think, an assault rifle, and... On top of it, if your buddy dies, then you die. Like, this just seems like the worst possible plan that they could have come up with. And so, they send them up this hill to go kill the Wild Seven. And the ones that make it inside, Shuya lets them in. And... tells them that they're going to be buds, and then there's just all these boring ass monologues where he's like, oh, adults, they're terrible, oh, my parents, oh. And I don't understand how you take a movie with that basic setup and turn it into like the most boring thing ever, but they succeeded.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's the sequel. Don't ever watch it. It's awful.
No, it seems bad. But there is still some Takeshi Kitano stuff in it, so I guess at some point in my life I'll have to watch it.
No, he's not in the sequel, is he?
Well, because I know that the director of the first one was supposed to direct this, but then he died of, like, cancer after filming one scene with Takeshi.
Yeah, his son... His son directed the sequel.
Yep, took over for him. So there's not? Was he cut? Was there a little bit?
Know.
Because there's a character in the second one who is the daughter of Kitano's character.
Yeah.
Like, I've read up that much, at least.
I don't know. I really don't remember. But then again, I have only watched the sequel one time. Uh-huh. And...
That's enough.
That was before I was a Kitano fan.
Okay.
So, I don't know. Maybe he's in it as, like, a flashback or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what happens at the end of the first one, I can only imagine. But yeah. Who knows? Maybe I'll finally watch it and be like, Jason, you lied to me. How dare you?
I'm going to murder you.
Okay. I'll prepare for the 2 hours it takes for you to get up here.
Yeah, it is. She's the daughter. The main character is the daughter of Kitano. So I'm guessing she flashes back to,
flashback
to Kitano. Anyway, All right, so let's get in to this game. So I don't really know that I have anything else to say about Battle Royale, do you?
No, other than people just watch it.
Yeah, everybody should watch it because it's fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
it's a good movie to watch in groups of people. It'd be fun.
It is. So we are going to do some reviews. So I'm going to read, if you don't know how this works, I read a couple of reviews that are user reviews that I found various places. And Donnie tries to guess what the movie is.
Yikes.
Alright, so this one is by April Vanderwerf. She gave the... actually, you know what? I'm gonna leave that one for last. I'm gonna skip that one. So this is by Bruh.
Okay.
He gave it 5 stars. And said, loved the beginning of the movie. It made my friend cry her eyes out. That's it. This next one was just by a Rotten Tomatoes user with no name. They gave it 3.5 stars and said, don't go see this if you have a history of seizures.
Is this... No. Well, I can't... Is it chapter 2?
It is.
Okay.
And the first review that I was going to read, that was by April Vanderwerf, was 5 stars, and all it says is, I love Stephen King movies.
Wow. I would actually love that review if it was not for It Chapter 2.
All right, let's get into the next one. Okay. So, this is by Movie Water. And it's 5 stars. And the review says, simply, that wasn't Jack Black. All right, and then the next one is by... I mean, that by itself made the movie worth 5 stars in his eyes.
What the?
Wasn't Jack Black. 5 out of 5. Matt E. gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars and said, amazing film, made me feel like I was in the mind of Psychopath.
Okay.
Any guesses?
Let's say it was I'm drawing a blank.
Freaks.
I haven't heard of that. That might be playing in a theater somewhere. It was not playing at the theater here.
Well, it's playing at the theater here.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
Next up, we've got... Oh, boy. Mobigital, who gave this film 2 stars.
Uh-huh.
And said, poorly written story, bit bad in acting, but otherwise okay production. P-Dog gave it 0.5 star and said, horrible ending and story lacked context. And then Maury S., this one's going to give it away, but Maury S. said, 5 stars, very good show, you won't fall asleep, women were very sexy, good drama throughout.
You said that I'll give it away, but what? Oh my god! That, I think that the thing that you think is giving it away is actually making it more confusing for me. No, I give up.
Hustlers.
Oh god damn! I did see that. Well, I haven't watched the film, but I did see when I was scrolling through, it was playing at my local cinema, that was playing.
All right. We got one more.
Okay.
Joshua L. gave this 4 stars and said, the critics are so wrong on this one. Great movie. Great music. Catherine C. gave it 2.5 stars and said, strange movie, but a lot of discussion after.
What? But a lot of discussion after.
I don't get why that's a bad thing, but apparently it is.
Ugh. Okay, right. This time I'm being completely transparent. I am looking at what is playing in my local theater.
Alright.
And I'm gonna say that it is...
Alright, what do you got?
The Goldfinch.
You got it.
Wow. You're fucking with me, right?
Nope.
Wow.
The dumbest trailer in the world tells you nothing about the film.
I don't have context.
The critics are so wrong on this one. Great movie, great music. Strange movie, but a lot of discussion after.
A lot of discussion after. Man, who are these people who write these reviews? They're exactly who they say they are.
But my dad trusts them.
Yikes. I hate it.
Alright. I love reading these things because it just reminds me people are idiots. Alright, so let's plug some shit.
Let's plug it. Let's plug these holes.
I would like to quickly say that I also watched the movie 8th Grade this week, which I thoroughly enjoyed, although it did not make me cry.
Because you're a monster.
I am a robot with no feelings.
Absolutely.
I also... what else do I have? I don't know. I really liked Lana Del Rey's new album. And I think that might be it.
Okay.
I don't know. BioShock's a great game. Play that.
I have 2 recommendations this week. One of them being a documentary that is on Hulu. It's a Hulu original documentary, or at least exclusive. It's called Hail Satan. Because it is Hail Satan with question mark at the end, so I will not call it that because that is the title. And it is about the Satanic Temple, who is not actually about worshiping Satan, but is more about I don't have the correct term, but you know what I'm saying, is religious pluralism in the country. One of the main points is the Ten Commandments are put up, or are in Arkansas, the Ten Commandments were going to be put up in front of the Capitol building, or at the Capitol, and the Satanic Temple wants also their statue up, because if one religion is allowed to put up something, then the other one should be equal representation. And they for a while they are able to keep the Ten Commandments off of the front, or off of the property of the Capitol, because otherwise they'd have to allow other religions to put up their statues. And it's less about directly attacking Christianity, and it's more about make sure that there is separation of church and state, and also make sure that there is the freedom in the country to believe what you want to believe and not be discriminated against. That was the whole reason behind why people came to this country in the first place.
I do quickly want to say that I think I talked about this movie last week and gave it a shout out, and that as someone who most people would consider to be a Christian, I thoroughly enjoyed this film. So if you're hesitant because you're like, oh, I don't know, I like Jesus and the Bible, you have nothing to worry about. This movie is fucking awesome. Like, and as long as you agree with the fact that church and state should be separate, then you really got nothing to worry about, because you're probably going to agree with the movie's main message.
Mm-hmm. And also, I didn't realize quite how satanic the leader of the Satanic Temple looked, but he does look satanic.
He does,
because he has like one dead eye that's like grayed out and looking too off center, which is. But he seems like a very nice, well-spoken man.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I couldn't have said that more white than I could right there.
What was the other? Oh, the other thing I just wanted to quickly say or give as a reminder is that this is not theistic Satanism as preached and practiced by Anton LaVey. This is a and they are actually disowned by those Satanists. The members of the Satanic Temple are for the most part just atheists who want separate.
Yeah, because there's a specific cause behind being a Satanist as opposed to being an atheist, in which there seems to be no cause.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they put it by the end of the film. And then also, to get off the whole like Satanist thing for my second recommendation. I watched the first episode of What We Do in the Shadows on FX, which is not about Satan at all. It's good. I've only watched the first episode, and it's the same basic setup as the film, which if you haven't seen the film, I'd recommend watching the film, because
film is amazing.
Why shouldn't you watch that film? But they take the setup that was introduced in the film, and they do something. They spring new ideas out of the setups for that. Like it's essentially just another branch on the tree of the same. You know, it's a different branch of the same tree. The main thing being that there is a vampire who is with them. Who is not an actual vampire. He's a energy vampire who is someone who just bores other people to death and takes their energy that way, which is and he can also drain the energy out of other vampires, which is maybe one of the funniest things I've ever seen. But also that first episode is like packed with enough stuff that like, essentially, I got enough things out of that one episode that I got out of, like, that entire movie when I watched it first. Like, it's that, like, dense. It's so funny. That's so awesome. If you haven't seen it, it did get put on Hulu not that long ago. So
yeah, I saw that. I just haven't gotten around to it.
So anybody who was worried about, like, it not being the movie or it not living up, like, it's still Jermaine Clement, like, behind the scene. Like he writes the first episode at least. I don't know how far he goes into it, but it's still, the writing is so sharp that it's, you can't not watch it and not be entertained by it.
Agreed.
Those are my recommendations. Other than you should watch James Bond films.
I was gonna say, let's get into this. You're gonna do your Bond briefing on the 5 James Bond movies you watched this week.
Uh-huh. So, let me just... It's less straight-up recommendations or avoidances of certain James Bond films, and more of, Roger Moore is not a very good Bond. He's the worst Bond, in fact, and I think everybody should agree on this point. Also, a point that I brought up the Roger Moore thing to you, Jason, but what I didn't bring up to you beforehand was that Timothy Dalton is an awesome James Bond, and he only made two films, which I didn't realize he only made two films, which
now,
is amazing.
I've only seen, I think we counted, and I think I've only seen like six James Bond movies. And I've never seen a Timothy Dalton one, but from what I've been told, that is, he's one of the ones like with Moore and Lazenby that often gets dismissed. Is that true? Yeah.
Well, he was just in two, and I think people didn't, after Roger Moore, who is like the corny James Bond, like, damn it, Timothy Dalton is like, he's actually like a really depressed Bond, and like he's actually like the tortured soul kind of Bond that like is actually more in line with Daniel Craig's Bond, which is maybe why I like it so much. But it doesn't mean that, well, even Daniel Craig has like corny one-liners, so it's like you can never really quite get away from that entirely. But yeah, Timothy Dalton is awesome. He's so good in those movies, the two movies he did. And he was the one right before Brosnan. And he was actually going to be James Bond in GoldenEye until it took them so long to make that movie to finally put it into production that when they were like, "All right, we're starting to make this movie. You want to come over and play James Bond, Mr. Dalton?" And he was just like, "No, you guys took too long. I have other things I'm doing." And they're like, "Okay, let's get Pierce Brosnan." So, but I would highly recommend it. There's a way that you can watch a lot of these movies for free. There's 18 of them that are streaming for free. There's an app called Pluto TV, which is like really getting a lot of steam. So if you just want to hop on there, you can watch a lot of those films. That's how I watched them. You just have to deal with ads, and there's no way you can get around by paying for the service. So, but it's just like TV. There's live channels, and there's advertisements. They don't have enough commercials. They keep on repeating the same commercial over and over again, so be prepared for that. But it is a free way you can watch these movies. Mm-hmm. Skip the Roger Moore ones.
All right.
Also, I would like to say the George Lazenby one on Her Majesty's Secret Service is the most... The ending to that movie is the most depressing ending to a James Bond film ever made. So, just be sure to, you know that before you go in.
So I was just kind of curious how many James Bond movies there are. So I looked it up, and there are currently 24.
Yes, 25 will be this next year, the new Craig one with a... Fujikawa, I think is his name. He's the guy who directed all of season one of True Detective. He's directing this next one, so I'm excited.
Yep, that's him.
Very excited, so.
Yeah. Alright, I have nothing else to say about James Bond.
I don't blame you.
So, that being said, thank you so much for listening to our show. Please follow me on Twitter at whatever I said last time, which I think is just Jason Ranks Things. Follow Donnie on Twitter.
Yep, just search my name, it's fine. I'm not going to re-up my handle this week.
And, yeah, follow the show on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. You'll find a different person is running each thing.
Varying levels of quality.
And Yeah, please tell your friends about the show if you enjoyed it, and even if you didn't. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for listening, and have yourself a great night, and watch more movies. Goodbye!
Hail Satan.
Lords of Chaos.
Lords of Chaos.